What up, everybody? Brian Fritz back here on the Between the Ropes podcast. Thanks for listening, downloading, subscribing, all of that fun stuff. I almost used the word appreciate there, and I mentioned this on the podcast last week that I used that word like way too much. So I'm trying to cut back on saying appreciate, even though I do appreciate everybody that listens to the podcast and supports it and supports me. And on that note, a special thank you to everybody that did reach out to me this past week on social media and was hoping that myself and my family were doing okay, because I'm now here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. And of course, Hurricane Florence just came through this area over the past week. And luckily for myself, my wife, we are in an area where we didn't get hit that much. It was more just constant rain for a few days and some heavy winds, but nothing that was going to do any damage. I mean, the worst thing that happened, like in our neck of the woods over here, was some branches were down and things like that. It was all very superficial, any kind of damage that was done. We had no flooding in our area, but obviously there has been a tremendous amount of damage that has been done through the state because of this storm, and there's going to be more damage to come. And I've seen it from my job in being in a helicopter and filming video for news and seeing the incredible amount of damage that this storm has done to not just houses and businesses, but like to entire cities. It is amazing to see what it has done. It's going to take a long time for people to recover from this. And there's more damage that's going to happen, unfortunately, because of the flooding, because we've seen levees break and dams break, and there's more structural damage that's being done to bridges. And we've seen not just houses like halfway underwater, like a whole house underwater. We saw a church almost completely underwater, and a gas station and a hotel, and it's more than just one too. It's all over the place in various cities throughout the state. So my thoughts go out to everybody that has been affected by the storm. I know that over 24 people have lost their lives because of this as well. It's just a horrible situation. And if there's any way anybody can help out others, please do. Whether it's by helping with a charity or if you're in the area and can lend a helping hand, please do that, because there are a lot of people that are going to be in need now and for the foreseeable future. Because I can only imagine what it's like to have your whole life uprooted because of something like this, because a storm comes through, you live in that area, and next thing you know, your home has been destroyed. And it's a horrible situation, to say the least. So if you can help out anybody, please do that and keep everybody in your thoughts as well. When it comes to the wrestling side of things, I know that Scott Dawson, I believe, said his family, their home was greatly damaged. Matt Hardy, his home has been damaged, and a lot of people have reached out to him. I don't know what the extent of that damage is. And one thing I wonder about with Matt is, I believe in some documentaries he's done, he's shown like all of the things that he's collected over the years, and whether it's been things that he's gone to shows and collected, or whether it's items that people have sent to him. But I believe he keeps all of that stuff in his basement. Now, I could be wrong, but I believe that's where he keeps everything. And obviously, if there's going to be flooding, you would think that's going to affect your basement. So I don't know how much damage he has incurred. But hopefully anything that is valuable for him, that he was able to get to a safe area. But you never know what kind of damage a storm of this magnitude could do. So hopefully Matt and his home and his family are doing okay, and nothing too valuable is going to be damaged in that storm. So plenty to get to coming up here. Spencer Davies from Stick to the Gimmick podcast is going to be joining me to talk about everything, especially WWE, because I say this all the time, like there's a lot going on in WWE, but there really is, because of what they are doing now when it comes to upcoming shows, especially on the network. These big events are doing around the world, between Super Showdown in Australia. They're doing the Crown Jewel show now in Saudi Arabia, and all of these are going to be on the WWE network. And that's not even counting WWE Evolution, the all-women show that's coming up at the end of October, plus Hell in a Cell just happened. You know, they do the monthly pay-per-views, even though in October, they're not doing a dual branded pay-per-view from the standpoint of men and women. They're just doing Evolution, which has the women. But we'll get back to that in November when it comes to Survivor Series. But of course, you know, they do have Super Showdown in October, and then in very early November, they have the Saudi Arabia show. So we'll get to all of that. Plus with Spencer, you know, if you listen to his podcast, which I hope you're doing, the focus on his podcast is NXT. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit about what is going on with NXT right now, where they stand following their last big event that they did, the last TakeOver show, and now with Tommaso Ciampa, and some things that are going on with that brand. Because, I mean, I watch the shows, or typically I went to the taping, so I didn't watch all of the shows. I would kind of like pick through it because I'd already been to the tapings. But now that I can't go to the tapings, I'll have to pay more attention to the actual shows, because I like NXT a lot. And in the past, I just, like I said, I kind of picked through because I was like, I've already seen this match, I know what happens. So it was more on promos and backstage things you don't see at the tapings. So I'll have to make sure to watch all the shows all the way through going forward. But Spencer keeps a very keen eye on what's going on those shows. So we will get to all of that coming up here in a few minutes. Also, when I get done with Spencer, it will be a Q&A time. So I will get to your questions. By the way, I've been asking for questions and only basically taking them on the Facebook page lately, facebook.com/between the ropes. And some of that's just out of sheer laziness, I guess. But I just found that that's basically been the best place for people to give me questions for the podcast. It seems like not too many people were doing it on Twitter, and it's just easier to do it on Facebook, and hopefully it gets more people engaged on there as well. So that's basically where I'm going to keep it right now. So if you want to ask a question for the podcast, you know, I'll get to them every week. It's I just put up a post each week on the Facebook page, and you can go there and you can leave your questions. It makes it very easy for me, and hopefully it makes it very easy for you as well. So please keep doing that, and feel free to leave your questions there whenever I put up the post. I try to put it up a day or two in advance of taping the podcast, which the schedule for taping the podcast is kind of weird right now with the hours for my job. It's come down to now where I'm basically taping it like late morning, sometimes on a Wednesday, or in this case on a Thursday. I have a feeling that Thursday's probably going to be more common, but I hope everybody's cool with that, because, you know, if I tape it late morning, I can typically get the podcast out like by the middle of the day on Thursday. So I hope that works out for everybody in your listening habits, because I know there's a ton of other podcasts out there. So I really, really do thank everybody who subscribes to Between the Ropes and listens and supports us. By the way, I really appreciate everybody that is supporting Between the Ropes on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/between the ropes right now, anything that you would like to give to support the podcast is always appreciated. Even if it's a dollar a month, it goes a long way. It helps us out. It means a lot to me. $3 a month, though, you get the ad-free version of this podcast, so you don't have to listen to the ads. We've got some ads coming up here. Just going to warn you, that's the way it goes. We put ads in the podcast. But if you don't want to listen to the ads, it's only $3 a month. $3 a month on the Patreon page, and you get the ad-free version of the podcast. So if you could support me there, that would be fantastic as well. And for everybody that's already doing it, thank you very much. He is the sleep-deprived Spencer Davies joining me on the podcast, who I told Spencer, or I asked him if he could come on the podcast this week, and you said yes. And then you were just detailing to me about how you got almost no sleep, and now you have to conserve your energy, not only for this podcast, but for later tonight. You are tailgating in Cleveland when your Browns take on the Jets, and hoping that your NFL franchise can finally get its first win in, what, two seasons?
Since, actually, Christmas Eve of 2016.
Actually. Ooh. Good yes. Lord. Are you guys going to burn the city down if they get a victory?
No, I don't think it's going to burn down until like a Super Bowl actually happens. And I truly believe that's going to happen.
You're not
gonna
go,
the city's gonna whoa, you're going to be going down in flames.
Going to go Seth Rollins there. Burn it down. Okay.
Burn it down.
Yeah.
By the way, Spencer Davies, of course, one of the hosts of the popular Stick to the Gimmick podcast, of course, with Martin Harp as well. which I hope everybody is listening to that podcast. And we're going to talk some NXT, because I don't always delve into NXT too much, but that's like a specialty for you guys. Like, you talk mostly NXT, and then you delve over to some WWE stuff.
So, and then some random things.
Yeah, and then some random things as well, you know, so you have a little fun with that. So you had to get caught up on all of the stuff from this week that happened between WWE and NXT. So you're all caught up though, right?
Yep, everything. Except for the third episode of Mae Young Classic. That's it.
That's okay. See, yep. I feel like I can cheat a little bit, and I'm not going to be able to cheat coming up here, because like, I went to the Mae Young Classic and I saw all the matches, and I typically went to the NXT tapings and I would see the matches, so I could just kind of pick through the shows a little bit, and I could just see the backstage segments or other things I didn't see, or sometimes those would just be on YouTube. But now I don't live near Full Sail, you know, Winter Park, Florida, so I can't go to the tapings anymore. So I got to be a regular person like everyone else and watch the shows.
Good. So now you can't spoil things for me and Marty. We complain about you every freaking week.
That's beautiful. I love that. I love that, man. That's why I do it, though. I just love getting under your guys' skin about that. It's great.
Yeah, that's exactly why I have to avoid my phone and avoid that specific Twitter account, because I see, oh, look who's the new NXT champion, Tommaso Ciampa.
Okay. So can I defend myself on this one again? Okay.
Because go for it.
The reason I did it is because, you know what? WWE was going to put it out there either on their account, the NXT Twitter account, or Triple H. Okay. It was going to happen. So yeah, I figured, you know what? I don't feel that bad. I mean, if it's just another fan that was going to do it, then I'd be like, okay, I'm not going to touch that. That's on that person. Okay. But when it's the company itself is going to do it, I don't feel so bad about doing it.
No. Yeah. I mean, I guess you shouldn't. I just, that's kind of us just being grumps, because everything's spoiled by social media nowadays. There is no more any element of surprise, or very rarely, we should say.
But you were jealous because you weren't there to witness it, like I was.
Yeah, a little bit, just teeny bit jealous.
Let's talk a little Hell in a Cell.
I
thought Hell in a Cell was actually a really good show for the most part. I mean, we can sit here and gripe about the finish in the main event, which I get. I mean, you have a no contest and a Hell in a Cell match, which makes no sense whatsoever. Especially when the first match on the show is the other Cell match, when they do Orton against Hardy, and you know, the referee's giving the X and saying Jeff Hardy is done for, and Randy Orton is commanding him to do his job and make the count, even though Jeff Hardy might be dead. That doesn't make sense. But overall, I mean, I thought it was a good show. And one thing that really stood out to me after the fact, and I mean, I knew this going in, but you could really feel it as the show went on, is that if you count the pre-show, and there was one match of the pre-show, but there was only 8 matches total, so just 7 matches on the main card, and it just made the show, to me, feel like it breathed a little bit more. It didn't feel so rushed, and I think that helped with the overall show.
I completely agree. I was a big fan of Hell in a Cell, and usually one of our biggest complaints on our podcast is that WWE is doing every pay-per-view as a 4-hour event, and that's going to tire out crowds so easily, because that's usually reserved for one of the big four, and they're doing it for every single one of them, because now, obviously, as everyone knows, Raw and SmackDown are doing their pay-per-views together, so it's difficult to keep someone's attention for that long, but I feel like they booked it about perfectly with the way that they set up the matches, first of all, and also gave time in between, showed promo and vignettes, you know, of the rivalries, and I thought they did a really good job. I think the match that stood out to me the most, even though the opener is a damn close second to me, that stood out, because that was absolutely brutal. I absolutely love seeing this side of Randy Orton. I think it's the best thing for his character every time. A lot of people think he goes stale when he's faced, and I think they're right. So to see the sadistic side of RKO come out against Jeff Hardy was awesome. And of course, when Jeff Hardy was involved in the Hell in a Cell, you knew some crazy kind of spot was coming. You just didn't know what it would be. I was hoping he wouldn't go on top of the cell, and thankfully he didn't, but he pretty much scaled the inside of the top of the cell. So much for being done taking those crazy bumps, as he was talking about a few weeks prior. I thought the tag team match between Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre, and then Ambrose and Rollins was fantastic. Those two teams have great chemistry. And you know what? We've been kind of lollygagging a little bit on the tag team division. I liked the B team. I really did. And I think it was awesome that they got a push. But these guys are the real deal. You know, these are the main event level caliber types of talents that should be headlining your tag team division. So I loved the chemistry between those two teams. AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, a really good match. I think it was good storytelling more than the actual in-ring logistics, even though once they do that October 6th at Super Showdown, I bet that's going to be a hell of a match for the WWE Championship. And then I'd say that Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, again, really good storytelling, giving Becky the title on an intercepted spear into a pin combination. And we saw this past week on SmackDown that they're going to continue with that, and they're going to go for that at Super Showdown as well. It felt like it was kind of a transitional pay-per-view, but it was worth what a normal pay-per-view would be to me.
I think the big thing, too, was that when it came to the show, like, you know, I mentioned, like, they didn't overdo it with matches, but the matches that were on here made sense. And in like, not everybody gets to be on the pay-per-views. I've always been a big advocate of that. It's like, yeah, you want to be on those shows, but they have to go with the real focal points, especially when it comes to these B-level shows. And that's what they did here, is they took the biggest stuff that they had going on right now, and they put it all here. Now, they didn't have a Universal Championship match, or actually, they did have a Universal Championship match. So you had that match, you had the WWE Championship match, and then everything else is just kind of like, okay, if we defend the IC title, or if we defend the US title, or if we defend the tag team titles, not all of those have to be defended on all of these shows. So it made sense, I thought, with the matchups that they went with here. And I mean, the biggest thing that they've got going on right now, quite honestly, is all the stuff between the Shield and then Strowman and McIntyre and Ambrose, the Dogs of War. That's the name of that faction, by the way, which I don't know. I'm fine with that, I guess. I don't really have too much of a problem with it. But I mean, that's the biggest thing that they've got going on right now. And we saw those guys all over the show between the tag team match, which I thought was the match of the night, and then in the main event, where I still get scared watching those guys climb up that damn cage and they're fighting up there. I mean, you've got four guys fighting on top of the cell that I understand that they've probably done everything that they can to reinforce that structure, but we know that accidents can happen and they're way up there. So that's still pretty scary, but it's a hell of a visual to watch and to see those guys go at it. So the end of the show, you know, outside of that finish, which was flat, they did a great job, I thought, in the main event. The tag team match was fantastic. A lot of the finishes are making sense as well. They were really creative when it came to AJ and Samoa Joe with that finish to set up another match. So it's almost like they're paying attention to finishes. They're paying attention a little bit more to the little details. And they say, okay, here's the guys that need the spotlight. Here's some extra detail to feuds, you know, finishes, different things like that. And we saw it kind of come together in Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. Don't jinx it, though, Brian.
I'm trying not to jinx it.
Now, don't jinx it.
Let me ask you this, though, okay? So Orton and Hardy. Randy Orton, that dude can take a beating, okay? And he did. I mean, he got hit by that studded belt by Jeff Hardy.
His back was absolutely destroyed.
Right. It's disgusting, okay? And Hardy takes that bump, and thankfully didn't go on top of the cage, but he was, you know, doing the jungle gym swinging from the top of the cell from inside, though, and then took the stomach first bump, which, by the way, Randy Orton was like, there's no way I'm taking this move from this dude. And he moved out of the way like way early.
Way before it happened.
way before.
He wasn't taking any chances.
He's like, this ain't happening, Chief. But they did that.
Man, Jeff Hardy can destroy your own body. I'm out of here.
Right. No way. So, but earlier in the match, they did the spot where Orton got the screwdriver out and put it in Hardy's ear. And people are like all grossed out by it. And I get it. I mean, when you look at that visual, you're kind of like, oh my God, there's something that's not right about this. Like, this guy's sadistic. And I'm looking at it like, that dude's got like a button in his ear typically. I'm like, this is not hurting him at all. I'm like, this guy has stretched out his ear and he's got a hole there. And this guy is just putting a screwdriver through it and just kind of bouncing it back and forth.
I think it's because he actually twisted it once. But again, like you said, it's not going to hurt a guy who has gauges. But right. You know what? The visual is definitely good enough to make it cringeworthy, especially the way the commentary team sells it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it and I get it. They're doing a great job of selling it. But I'm looking at it like I'm just laughing because so many people are like grossed out by it. And I'm just like, eh. Okay.
It looks good. I'm still grossed out by it kind of, but you know what? I guess it just depends.
Yeah, yeah. The Styles Joe match, I was really impressed with that finish. I really was. The way they did that, Joe's got, you know, a beef now in that AJ tapped out, but the ref didn't see it and counted the three count, and AJ, you know, keeps the championship, and now they're going to be, you know, having the rematch coming up here. I was really impressed by the way they did that. I do wonder now, because they've got that new argument about that one, like, where do they go with the family stuff? Because that's been such a big part of this rivalry, in Samoa Joe calling out AJ Styles and his family and whatnot. So I almost kind of wonder if, like, they've transitioned off of that, and now it's more of, that title is mine, I got robbed, and I'm going to take it for you on the next show.
Well, that was the base of the rivalry. Remember that? Like, when he was looking for his number one contender and Joe attacks him from behind, and then he starts all that stuff, talks about AJ's family, his mom, his daughter, and stuff like that. That happened at the pay-per-view, I believe. Was it Money in the Bank or whatever one it was before Hell in a Cell, where he was like looking at his family and talking to him on the microphone before the match started. We had the disqualification because AJ got really pissed. Then that transitioned into the second match, what we just saw. And then, yeah, it became more of a one-up, even though the match itself was, it started to get really personal. But I'm sure that it's going to turn into this, like, kind of, I'm better than you, you're better than me. But there still will probably be a little bit of stuff, a little bit of trash talking on the end of getting family involved. But, yeah, this is going to be more, I think, one-upsmanship than anything, but fantastic rivalry they've had so far, and it's crazy to see two former TNA champions go at it for the WWE title.
Yeah, and that is still kind of weird. Two former Ring of Honor champions going at it for the WWE title as well. So, I mean, these guys have been wrestling together for 15 years.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the time where you were working close to them, at least, right?
Oh yeah, I mean. I watched them in Ring of Honor, but I wasn't at the shows. But with, like, when they were with TNA, I was there for all of those shows in Orlando, especially like the first like 7-8 years or whatever. I mean, I literally was at every one of those shows. It was
when AJ had the buzz cut and Samoa Joe had the pearl necklace.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, man. I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, geez. Yeah. For all of those shows. I mean, everybody talks about like that great triple threat between those two guys and Christopher Daniels that they had back in, like, was it 2005? I want to say, like, I was sitting right there in the front row, you know, on the hard camera side. Cause they had these two long rows, and that's where like Dixie Carter and other people at the company sat. And I was allowed to sit over there with them. There were some other people as well. There was like a regular group of like 6 or 8 of us. And we would all sit right there for all those shows. I mean, there would be a rarity if I would miss a show when it came to the tapings or whatever. So, I mean, I went to probably like 90% of those tapings and the pay-per-view events. So I saw all of those guys when they were getting those opportunities and they were coming up here. I would see what happened backstage. Like, I remember going backstage and going, is that CM Punk? Like, what the hell is he doing here? Like, he was just there visiting friends, and he's sitting there watching the show, you know, on the camera on the monitor in the back with everybody else, you know? And we were like, okay, is he going to come in here or what? Because if you remember at one point, there was this big thing like, okay, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, hottest free agents out there. Where are they going to go? And there was a lot of talk about maybe WWE's interested in both of them. TNA's definitely interested in both of them. They have options. And Joe went. And I don't know what kind of interest he got from WWE at the time, but he ended up in TNA, obviously, and Punk went to WWE. And it's an interesting what if either of them had gone the other way, if they had those opportunities, especially when it comes to Joe going to WWE. But what might have happened if Punk ended up in TNA?
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that Samoa Joe was long overdue. I mean, I just remember just flipping through the channels and randomly discovering NWA TNA, and I saw him face Kurt Angle. I remember that match like yesterday. And I was like, damn, this dude can go.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He can still go right now. I think he's still just in the prime of his career, and he's easily a top three heel in the company.
He understands psychology so well, and he understands his character. That's the things that you have to be able to understand, I think, especially as you get older, you get more experience, kind of like with anything else, but especially in this business. Like, he understands his character better than anybody else. And that's why when we sit here and we say, well, maybe that's a little bit hokey, or that's going to be something that's different. Can somebody pull that off? Joe understands himself so well and understands psychology and can do promos so well that he can make those things work. He can make story time with AJ Styles work. He can make these other things work because that's where he's at in his career, and he's that damn good.
Exactly, and it's not intentional, but he can also entertain the hell out of you, too, with the, oh, Wendy!
Yeah, exactly! I'm like, for anybody that's ever met Joe, he's like this nice, cuddly teddy bear, too, and he goes out there, and he's frightening. I mean, he scares the bejesus out of people, man, watching this dude, and you're just like, oh, my God. Like, he just is able to morph into this different person that will get under your skin and terrify you in certain ways. And it's a different kind of way than what Braun Strowman does, because he's just so physically imposing. Like, Joe is a big dude, but also can just screw with your mind a little bit more with these promos and whatnot.
Right. And I think the other thing about Joe, too, is like, even though, and me and Marty talk about this all the time, is even though he is this like intimidating, like, you know, monstrous heel, he's still believable to be beatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's another huge thing too.
When I look at WWE right now, and I've mentioned this before, it is so weird. And we're still wrapping our head around this from the standpoint of all the programming that they have going on and all the different things they're promoting. Because going into Hell in a Cell, they're obviously promoting that show. There was some promotion for Evolution, and there was definitely promotion for Super Showdown. And then now they've moved on past Hell in a Cell, and they're still promoting Evolution. That's going to ramp up here in the coming weeks. But there's a lot of emphasis on Super Showdown in Australia, which is on October 6th, and the Saudi Arabia show, which is November the 2nd. It's less than a week after Evolution. And that's just where we're at right now with WWE, in that they are doing these mega shows, and by the way, they're getting paid just a crap ton of money, so there's no question why they're doing it. But it feels so weird that there's three shows that they're promoting at one time. It's not like we're just laser focused on one big event. It's we've got three big shows that are coming up here, and they're trying to promote all three of them at the same time.
It's trying out a new model. It is a little weird. But you know what? they're kind of bending the rules a little bit. Remember how they told us they were only going to be 12 pay-per-views a year?
Yeah.
It's not the truth anymore. It technically it is.
Well, they're not pay-per-views. Those are network specials.
Those are live events. Yes.
Yes.
Like they did from Japan, like they've done from Saudi Arabia before. I understand that, but they're pay-per-views. Let's be honest. I mean, they're putting these storylines into Raw, into SmackDown. Now we're not used to seeing that. We're not used to seeing them promote for live events. They're treating these as if they are pay-per-views.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Saudi Arabia show, I mean, this is like a 10-year agreement. They're getting paid $40, $50 million, somewhere in that range. And, well, here's the thing, though, that we're still waiting to find out, okay, because we know what kind of money they're getting. Was that just for the show that they already did? Or is that for each show that they're doing?
Oh.
Which we don't know yet. Yes.
Per show?
It could be per. Now, mind you, WWE is not going to announce like flat out like, hey, this is what we're getting paid for that show. And Saudi Arabia is not going to mention that as well. But WWE being a publicly traded company, they have to disclose everything in their financials. And when you look at all their different categories, and there's one that says other, and last year was like $5 million, and then this year it's like $52 million. It's just like, I think I know into that other category, you know? And so that's going to be interesting to find out, like, coming up in their financials coming up here. But either way, I mean, even if it was for two shows and you made, you know, this $45, $50 million amount, I mean, of course it's worth it for WWE. I mean, they're getting paid just a crap ton of money for these shows. And that's why we're seeing, you know, and these big stars come back. That's why we're going to see Shawn Michaels come out of retirement to do the Saudi Arabia show. And he's going to be in the corner of Triple H for a Super Showdown. That's why we see Taker on these shows. That's why we are now going to see Brock Lesnar on the Saudi Arabia show. And why we saw Brock come back at the end of Hell in a Cell to, you know, create that non-finish and taking out both Strowman and Reigns. And hey, we all wondered kind of like, okay, is Brock Lesnar out of our WWE lives for a little while, you know, after SummerSlam? And there were a lot of reports that his contract had expired. I know there's some people that, you know, there's been a lot of questions about Lesnar's contract and where exactly it stands. My understanding is his contract expired after SummerSlam, but they had already, like, he and his camp had already started talking to WWE about a new deal. Or WWE probably approached them and said, hey, here's what we got going on. And you're not under contract with UFC, or at least you are still under contract in a way where you can negotiate with us. So WWE came to a new deal with them. And I'm not exactly sure how long it's for. Obviously, it's through the Saudi Arabia show. I think, if I had to guess, it's probably got WrestleMania covered on there as well. So I don't know how often we're going to see Brock back in WWE over the next, you know, 6 months, but he's going to be on the Saudi Arabia show. I would guess that no matter what, he's going to be at WrestleMania, and then we'll see, you know, what happens when it comes to his UFC career. But, you know, WWE's got so much money right now, and that Saudi Arabia show pays so much. Guess what? Brock Lesnar's not leaving WWE.
Well, I mean, it only would make creative sense to give him an opportunity at a rematch, though, because he never invoked his rematch clause.
But in a triple threat?
I guess. I don't know. Well, that means that obviously that's not his only match then.
But do we really want to see Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns one-on-one again?
Yeah, it'd be for like the 1,000,000,000th time. I know. But you know what?
It would be for like the 5th time, but it feels like it's that many.
It really does. And I think the reason they keep bringing this guy back, and it's funny because, I mean, I grew even a little bit tired of the guy, you know, once he lost the championship and went away. What we don't realize is how big of a draw this guy is still. And he got the biggest pop of the night at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I couldn't believe it. Like when I was watching, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Plus it was a surprise. Like nobody saw that coming.
Nobody saw it coming. Nobody. It didn't make any logical sense whatsoever, but still nobody saw it coming. You know, it kind of reminded me of just the Hell in a Cell match where Kane debuted. You know, he just kicks the cell in. You know, goes in there, wreaks absolute havoc. He kicked the crap out of both Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Pretty much saying, I'm still here. He debuted this new beard. I don't know if he's going to keep it. But he's still a draw, whether we like it or not. He's still a draw. And fans, non-hardcore fans, are going to react to that. And I think that's why they're keeping him around. He's still decent in the ring. And we know he works stiff. And we know he hits hard. So you're always going to see something with Brock.
Well, that's the thing. I think some people have grown tired of just how they've used Brock when it comes to storytelling, and that, like, he's not there all the time, but he was the champion. He's no longer the champion. I think some people have grown tired of Brock Lesnar matches because they become more formulaic, and he's not doing these outrageous things in the ring as much as what we've seen in the past when it comes to him utilizing his athleticism. And that's something I would like to see more, because it feels like his matches become way too cookie cutter. Now, however, the one thing that people love seeing, and as much as we can be tired of Brock Lesnar, I think this is something probably you enjoy and I enjoy, and obviously the average fan enjoys. We love watching Brock Lesnar wreak havoc. Like, whenever this dude shows up, and if he's going to be just this wild, untamed animal that will show up at any point and will be kicking cell doors in and just doing, you know, freakish stuff and throwing people around. We love
hitting
that.
Hitting people with tables, like, as using them as a chair.
Right.
Like, that was insane.
Right. Like, we love this. I was like, this guy is just, you know, unhinged.
Beating the ever-living hell out of everybody.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, if I'm in the ring and I see this dude coming, I'm just like, Jesus, what is he going to do to me over here? It's just like anything that he can find that he can pick up, he's going to hit me with it. That's just part of the deal. But that's the Brock Lesnar we like seeing. And plus, you can tell that he's been training because he's dropped weight. And Brock did that whole, you know, jump up on the apron thing. And he looks so light, you know, like it felt like almost like he could jump over the ropes, you know, in that same motion. And he's just this, he walks out there and his freaking arms go down past his knees. And it's just like, dear God, what's he going to do to these people? Right.
Yep. He's a physical specimen. All right. And I mean, he F5'd both the guys. He F5'd Roman Reigns onto Braun Strowman. And I'm pretty sure Roman's foot hit Braun directly in the face when that happened.
Oh,
I don't know if that was intentional, but
did anybody notice too, when it comes to like unintentional, bad hits on that show? So during that main event, and mind you, Strowman and Reigns are like selling for like 10 minutes and they're probably looking straight up as they watch four guys, you know, fight on the cage above them, you know, going, oh, look at what they're doing up there. Like, McIntyre had to climb the cage and it looked like he did not find the footholds in the cage and he was just like climbing up hard way kind of like thing, you know? I mean, this guy's what, 6'4", 270 or whatever, and who
using
knows?
Using all arms.
Right, and I don't even know what size shoes he wears, but probably like 15 or bigger or something, I don't know. And he's climbing, you know, he's trying to put his feet into this cage so he can climb up and it's like all arms like you said. And then once he gets up there, he gets hit in the face by Dean Ambrose with the cane. Like he immediately takes a cane shot. Like it looked like it was like right in the face or the shoulder. It was like, it was pretty high in him and it looked pretty rough.
and you know what? The thing I was thinking about during that match, and obviously he knows that, you know, everyone's okay and stuff like that. But you just look at Mick Foley just looking up and saying, oh man, I remember being up there.
It's even higher than when Mick was in the cell, I think.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What did you think about them spray painting it red?
I didn't have a problem with it. Like, whatever.
I didn't have a problem with it either. But I did see a bunch of jokes on Twitter, and like one of them was like it was a grocery basket or one of those kids toys that has like all the like the little holes in it.
Yeah,
that little like square shaped box thing. And I was like, oh yeah, it kind of does look like that.
But can't you imagine like weeks before Vince going, you know what? Got an idea. It's hell in a cell. We got to make it look like hell. Let's paint the cell red. Everybody's like, yeah, good idea, boss. Yeah, yeah.
Next year, it'll be black with flame decals on it.
Just emojis pasted all over it.
What did you think about the bump that Ziggler and Rollins took?
It was about as safe as possible. I mean, yeah. It's still like, do we really?
It's still high, but it wasn't.
Oh yeah. And it was one of those where they're like hanging, they're hitting each other, but they're both looking down like, all right, let's hit the targets, which I can understand where people would say like, well, it looks a little bit too pre-planned, but you know what? If that means they're going to be safe and they're still going to take these big bumps, they're going to get a reaction, and so be it.
Yeah. You know? So be it. And you know what? I think, you could definitely tell that, I mean, they jumped to where they were going, but you know what? Yeah, it's, you're not the one falling off of the cell.
Right.
You know what? One of my favorite Hell in a Cell spots was when Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins were going at it and they were in a main event and, they had that awesome match like before Bray returned.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah.
And they had an amazing spot from the same pretty much location on the cell, but they did it a little differently, and that was one of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches ever, honestly. But yeah, no, I think that it sucks that it had to take away from the Braun and Roman match, because I thought the match was actually going pretty well to that point, other than Mick maybe accidentally having his hand hit the mat. I think it was his wrist, by the way.
Oh,
I know
Yeah, the three count, where a lot of people think that Strowman should be the champion right now.
Right, right, right. I think that Mick's wrist hit the mat. It wasn't his hand.
Mm.
But it really looked like they were panicking, and Mick had this look in his eye. I was like, oh, no.
What have I done?
Mick comes back for one big event, and he does this.
What have I done? Oh, my God. Here's another takeaway from that show, because so you had the guys you fighting on top of the cage when it comes to Ambrose and McIntyre and Rollins and Ziggler, and then the last two guys take the big bump off the side through the tables and everything. They actually followed up on that on Raw, and everybody sold in their matches.
Like, no, it's like they're actually paying attention.
It was amazing, man. I'm watching this like early on, you know, they do the Ambrose McIntyre match, and early in the match, Ambrose goes after Drew's knee, and Drew sells the entire match, and the finish made perfect sense in that Ambrose got too confident, went for that big move off the top out to outside the ring. Drew moves out of the way. Ambrose crashes and burns, barely gets back in the ring by the count of 10. And at that moment, right when he slides in, McIntyre hits him with his finish.
Yep.
Boom. Done. Pins him. That's over. And then later on, we get the Ziggler and Rollins match.
Intercontinental title matchup.
And they're selling the entire time. Like, oh my God, my back hurts. I can barely do anything out here, you know? And it's just like, wow, they're selling. This is incredible.
It's amazing what continuity can do for a product. I mean, it's that simple. I feel like this should be something that isn't something we celebrate. It should just be natural. This, you're writing a show. You got to know what you're doing makes sense considering what happened the night before. You know, like, I feel like it just makes more sense. And even in the main event with Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns was selling too.
Right. He was. Even though we did have Baron Corbin in that match. Oh.
Constable Corbin. Be right.
Constable Actually, Corbin.
Acting general manager of Raw.
Right.
Baron Corbin. Sorry.
Did anybody really believe Baron Corbin was going to win that match?
I don't think so, but I think that was a pretty good match, though.
It wasn't a bad match. It was not a bad match.
Remember, I do like Baron Corbin.
Hey, I'm fine with Baron. I'm not as down on him as a lot of people, but I just think, I don't know about the role he's in right now.
I think he's doing well on the microphone, though. And I think I think that he's buying into the character, honestly.
Well, some of it for me is I'm a little bit tired of the whole heel GM. I think that's been overdone. So
Head over to SmackDown. Paige is right there.
I love me some SmackDown. But you know what? Quite honestly, I wish neither had a GM, but that is what it is. I mean, I would like to see if they're going to do a commissioner or a GM or whatever you want to call it. I would like to see that person be involved like once every 2 months.
Let's do the computer again.
Where's Jack Tunney? I mean, come on. I loved it when it was a big deal when Jack Tunney back in the day came out and said, we're going to do this match at WrestleMania or wherever, or I have to do a ruling on something. You know, that was a big deal. And we're just in a different day and age now where it's GMs. It's not only just a GM, it's a GM and a commissioner.
You can go to NXT then too. There's always that. Hey, Brian, I'm just thinking right now. We glossed over one match in Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
Yeah. Ronda Rousey.
Yes.
Going against Alexa Bliss, her first title defense. What did you think of that? I thought that she actually did really well.
She did. I was a little bit surprised by the amount of selling that they had Ronda do, but she's good at it. She really is. I mean, considering that she just steamrolled over Alexa to win the championship. And they did this, but no, Ronda's been really good. And I think she's just getting better and better every time. She's showing more things that she could be trusted to do in a longer match or even when it comes to selling. So, but I still wonder, like, there's so many other things that they have going on right now that maybe she doesn't feel as special, but she's still a really big deal.
Right. She's a draw too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and she'll be more of a focal point when it comes to like Evolution and then, you know, going into WrestleMania season next year, whatever they do there, there's still a lot of rumors about where they're going to go with her coming up here. I have no idea. It's all over the map. I think there's plenty of ideas that are on the table. So for anybody that says, I know exactly what they're going to do with her, you know, Mania, you don't know what they're going to do with her yet.
Oh, they have so many different avenues they can go. But back to that selling thing. I think the best part about the way she sells is we know that she's a badass. So even though she's wounded, you know that she's going to tough through it. She's going to grind through the match and find a way.
She puts on the Ronda face.
When
you get that Ronda face, it's just like, oh, my God.
That is good. I would like to see her smile a little less.
Yeah.
But I think overall, like, just this, the way that this, you know, project is working for them and this test run is going for her, I feel like it's going really well. And I think in the ring, she's fantastic. I really do.
Yeah.
She's super athletic. She is definitely selling well. You know, her moves are impactful. It's almost like a version of Brock Lesnar in a way, the way she kicks the crap out of people with those jabs in the corner. She has that clothesline into a roll. That's awesome. I love her finish. Not the armbar, obviously, but the spinning, I don't know what you want to call it, Samoan drop.
Yeah.
It's nasty. I like it a lot.
Well, you can tell that she's feeling more comfortable out there and she's expanding the moveset. They're, you know, and she's proving to them even behind the scenes that she could do all this stuff. And then she goes out there and she executes it.
Yeah, there was like a T-bone suplex, but the person was facing the other way. I don't know exactly what you call it, but it's just a throw. That was nice, too. I think she is. She's getting better. She's getting more confident as a talker, I think. Still a little too soft-spoken, but she's getting there.
Yeah.
Like when she's in the back after she got attacked on Raw, the go-home Raw before the pay-per-view, she's like, I never backed down a fight in my life. I was like, okay, good. That's the intensity I want to see out of Ronda Rousey.
Right. And I just hope that they don't put her in some bad positions or awkward positions. Like, it was a little bit awkward on Monday when they, you know, they show her backstage and she's like, so what exactly do I have to do when it comes to an open challenge? This is like, go out there and do an open challenge. And that's basically what they said too. But I mean, it's kind of like the inmates run the asylum on Raw to some extent, even though you do have an acting GM. But it's just kind of weird the way they do that. But it's like, try to keep her clear of some of these awkward things that they don't mean everything, but you still don't want to put your top people in those positions to where it's kind of like you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
But no, she's doing really well. I mean, I think everybody has to be pleasantly surprised by how good she's doing. And I'm really curious to see how good is she going to be by, say, WrestleMania. And does that possibly change their mentality of what they would want to do with her from a standpoint that, yeah, they're going to put her in there with, it's going to be a top program, but does it change like, okay, we can do this in a match now, or we can do that, or we can give them this much more time or whatever they want to do with it. Or maybe they were sitting there thinking, you know what? I don't know if this would be a final match in the card thing. But now, if she is that much better, maybe we could do that at the end of a show because we trust her, because we want a match that not only makes sense storyline-wise, but when it comes to what they can actually do in the ring. And she might be at that point where they say, man, she's progressed so much that we feel like she's going to have a really good match.
Could always do champion versus champion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember that there were rumors right out of WrestleMania this past year that they were going to set up her against Charlotte. And maybe that's still something they're going to do. There's been some rumors lately that she's going to face Chris Cyborg, you know, from UFC. And
really?
And Cyborg's not shooting it down. She's kind of like, she's not saying she's doing it. She's not saying she's been approached, but she's kind of like, oh, I'd be open to that and everything. I don't know if that's something I'm going to do. I mean, you got to get UFC to approve that. Is it really a draw to do that? Would Ronda want to do that? I think there's a lot of questions for that. So that's kind of one of these things where I'll believe it when I see it. Who knows? Maybe that would happen, but I don't see that one right now. But there's a lot of discussion about that. It's at least out there being rumored about.
We gonna put him in a octagon just like we did with Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn?
Oh God, no!
We're not doing it that way.
Yeah, huh? You put it over there by the entrance ramp or whatever on the side.
That's right.
Jeez,
the good old days.
The good old days, man. Yeah, I don't think we're gonna get that. I don't think we're. You know what we are gonna get though? WWE, as much as they don't like tournaments, on the Saudi Arabia show, they are going to do. Get this. So they're going to do the triple threat with Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman for the Universal Championship. While they haven't announced it yet, it very much looks like Shawn Michaels out of retirement, teaming with Triple H against Kane and The Undertaker.
Oh God!
And they're going to do a one-night World Cup tournament.
So King of the Ring on the other side hemisphere.
Basically, yes.
Now,
here's what I want to know. Does the winner get a crown with a jewel in it, considering the show is called Crown Jewel?
I'm going to say yes.
Because, I mean, they already did the trophy thing earlier this year.
Okay.
Okay, because remember, Strowman won that trophy, which was just as big as he is.
Yes, the Andre the Giant, right?
No. I mean, the one for the Saudi Arabia Battle Royal. Oh,
the Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble.
That's right.
Because he got the green championship title, and he got that trophy. So did he really get that trophy?
I don't know. You know what, though? It's like King of the Ring, though. I like it.
I'll tell you this, okay? I was scheduled to talk to Braun Strowman this past Monday, and I couldn't do it because of work, because we're working a lot extra to cover hurricane coverage. So I had to cancel the interview with Braun Strowman. I would have loved to have asked him where that trophy is. God, missed out on that one. But yeah, they're doing a one-night World Cup tournament at night, and you know, that show's going to be on the network now, too. So, I mean, they're loading up those Saudi shows.
Oh, man. Brian, are they really going to waste Shawn Michaels' return match on that?
Yep.
At least tell me that if he comes back, that he has more than one match.
I don't know. I mean, it just depends. I mean,
please. If that's the last. No, we can't do that.
This is a special circumstance, because Shawn's always said no. And WWE has made him so many different offers to come back. They wanted him to come back at the first Saudi Arabia show, and he said no. Remember, he could have faced AJ Styles at WrestleMania. That was on the table, and he said no, which that would have been, hey, I don't care how old Shawn Michaels is. I mean, Shawn Michaels against AJ Styles, come on. And
maybe he gets a little bit of an adrenaline rush, and he's like, okay, I can do like two or three.
It's about money. Well, it depends how much money he's going to get. I mean, who knows what they're paying him, but I mean, if they come to him on the show and they go, we're going to give you $2 million. We're going to give you $3 million. Come out of retirement. I'm like, I can't blame the guy for saying, you know what? That's too much money for one match. It's a tag team match. He doesn't have to do that much. I mean, Shawn will make sure that he has the best match possible. He will make sure that he is in really good shape. I don't care if Shawn Michaels wrestles in a t-shirt. I mean, because I know some people be like, oh my God, he won't even take off his t-shirt. He's so old. I don't know if he's going to do that or not. I don't care. I'm like, somebody's offering that kind of money. Shawn's a professional. He'll do the best that he can, you know, and he's not going to go out there and half-ass it, but I can't blame the dude for coming out of retirement for the amount of money that's being offered.
No, you can't. Just as a fan, I'm talking from that perspective.
Oh, trust me. As a fan, I don't think I ever wanted to see him come back, even against AJ. I mean, I'd definitely watch it. I'd be excited about it, but I've kind of put myself in the position of, hey, good for you. You retired. I've enjoyed your career, and I'm glad that you're still a part of the company, but I don't need to ever see you in the ring again.
And you know what? Like, that's when I was confused, like a few weeks back when, you know, Shawn was, you know, pretty much promoting the Triple H Undertaker match at Super Showdown. And that's why I literally thought that that's what all it was going to be. And then I heard the gong and I was like, what the hell?
Right.
And then
we thought it was Shawn against Taker.
Yeah. And then they had a back and forth, and you're like, so are they setting this up for down the line? Like, are they doing a third time? Like,
they could. I mean, they could. So, I mean, Shawn's going to be in Triple H's corner at Super Showdown. Kane will be in Taker's. They'll obviously do the setup there to set up the tag team match. And then who knows where they go after that? I mean, could they do Shawn against Taker at Mania? At that point, Shawn might say, you know what? I've already come out of retirement. It doesn't matter if I do one match or if I do five matches, right? I'm out of retirement. If they're going to pay me a bunch of money to do WrestleMania against Undertaker, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could absolutely see that.
Another wrench in this whole thing is what I want to know is, how are they getting Kane away from being mayor to go across the world?
You haven't seen that story
places?
Yet? You no. Dude, WWE, and I'm not making this up, they are donating $100,000 to a special program in his county. To kind of like, hey, thank you for letting us borrow your mayor. We're going to give you $100,000.
We scratch your back, you scratch ours.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm looking right now for the exact program that they're giving money to, but yeah, that's exactly what they are doing, is they are donating money to Knox County, where he is the mayor. It's for a special program there, charity, and they're like, hey, thanks for letting us borrow your mayor for a couple of days so we can go wrestle on the other side of the world.
God, I really hope nothing flies off the handle over there while he's gone.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, Jesse Ventura was the governor of Minnesota, and he was the referee for SummerSlam.
That's true.
I think we'll be okay.
But back to that whole Shawn Michaels thing. If you had, okay, say he does like 3 to 5 more matches, who are your ideal opponents? Because I got mine at least.
Well, I mean, I think the guys we want to see him in there the most with are AJ.
Yes.
Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Seth Rollins.
That was the next one I was going to go to. I have a special one too.
Okay.
Just because he's been building up momentum, and that was my guy. Andrade Cien Almas.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I think that'd be a really good meshing of styles.
Can I throw one out there that can make sense, and when they initially hear it, you'll be like, but then I can give my reasons why.
Go.
Tommaso Ciampa.
Oh, me and Marty actually talked about this. We didn't talk about him going against Ciampa, but we talked about Sean coming to the invading NXT and actually having a main event level match with whoever the NXT champion is. And we thought it would be Adam Cole,
right?
But Adam Cole would be another one of my opponents, by the way.
But Ciampa is the longtime heel champion, and he continues on this path where you see him on social media, he's playing up the character, he's playing heel, he's just doing everything. And like, he continues to find ways to win, but he's just destroying people. And like, he wins matches, but he destroys people behind the scenes. He's just totally out of control at some point. Right. And William Regal is like, what do I have to do to get this guy under control? I can't, you know, he's our champion. I'm not going to strip him of the title. I got to do something, you know. And they want to do something special. And if Sean's already come out of retirement, and I know it's NXT, but storyline wise, that can make a lot of sense. And you just imagine the juice you could get out of, what if Ciampa beat Shawn Michaels and the bragging rights that would come to that?
I think regardless of who he would face, and because, I mean, Ciampa would love the rub. I don't think he needs the rub.
He doesn't, but my God, it would mean so much.
But just for Sean to come to NXT and someone just mouth off to him, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. And that's another discussion me and Marty have all the time. This is kind of a subtopic, but we would love it if, you know, random main roster guys showed up on NXT once in a while. Those who are being underutilized. Like, for example, Tyler Breeze was on live shows.
Fandango's been on
the past few weeks.
Not Fandango, not Luke Harper.
Exactly. Guys who are underutilized on the main roster, come back down to NXT. I'm sure they'll do something for you, at least give you some sort of busy work rather than jobbing on these shows, you know? Especially because, you know, this company is so deep of talent that not everyone's going to have a program. It's impossible. So you know, go and fine tune some skills, go down to NXT, see if you can draw their eye again, and then get back up.
So before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about NXT, because you
don't do it too much. I got a podcast to host tomorrow, Brian.
Well, I know, but I mean, you and Marty on Stick to the Gimmick, that's your specialty, is you talk a lot about NXT. I just want to get your gauge on where a couple things are right now, because obviously you follow that show very closely.
Very closely.
Yeah. So fans are now acting at least a little bit mixed on Johnny Gargano. And, you know, basically what has happened with Ciampa, and now Johnny's kind of losing his mind. The recent edition of NXT, I have not watched NXT the last couple of weeks, and that's because I went to the tapings. So where are they at? What have happened over the last couple of weeks?
Okay, so the main event was champion versus champion of the latest episode.
Right.
Okay.
Explain to everybody what champion versus champion was.
Ricochet, the North American champion, going against Pete Dunne, the United Kingdom champion.
Right.
Which was an amazing match. Me and Marty called it, though. There was no way they were going to have a definitive winner between these guys.
Right.
Undisputed Era came out and ruined the party, but... A couple of weeks beforehand, it was Johnny Gargano versus Velveteen Dream.
Yep.
Velveteen Dream won.
Yep.
And it was clean.
And Gargano had some chances, but it, like, was an emotional wreck during the match. Like, he had an emotional breakdown.
You see what his feud with Tommaso Ciampa has done to his mind. And you see that he's being affected, as in sort of he's turning into Ciampa a little bit. He's starting to get that sadistic side of him. You saw it at the pay-per-view, the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn.
And that's what cost him the match.
Yep, and it cost him the match. But you just see that side of him coming out, and you just see that, for instance, it looks like Tommaso Ciampa's winning because he's the one getting inside of his head. And Ciampa's the king of the mountain now. He's got the title. And Johnny, though I'm sure they're going to revisit this feud soon, he's kind of just floating around right now because he can't beat him. And he can't beat him in his own head now, too. So now that's transitioning to him being a little bit more harsh. But he's not like a full-fledged heel or anything like that, but you can just see it's affecting him.
Do you think we'll see America's favorite babyface turn heel?
That would be fantastic. It would be very unexpected, though. Me and Marty always talk about what would happen, say, if Ciampa and Gargano had a double turn, or even better, if Gargano turned and they formed DIY heel.
That's kind of what I'm wondering about. It's like, finally, you know, Gargano gets to this point, goes, you know what? I thought I was a better person than you, and come to find out, I'm just not.
The way they could do that turn is just say that he attacked Alistair, by the way. But I don't think that's what they're setting up. I don't know exactly who they're going to have ambushed Alistair Black, but I'm sure we'll find out soon, because they keep on going to William Regal's office and talking to the superstars, whether they had an alibi, whether they had, you know, any thoughts or what they saw about the Alistair attack. So that's what they've been doing over the past month or so. But I don't think that's what they're going to do with Johnny. Not yet, at least. But I could see him just saying F it and snapping, you know.
I want to see, where do they go next with all of this when it comes to, okay, who does Ciampa face next? Which has to be Alistair, but even after that, and then where do they go with Ciampa and Gargano? Like, do they team, or do they face each other one more time?
It's still an underlying storyline. And you know what? A wrench got thrown into this thing when Alistair Black got hurt at the live show.
Absolutely.
Because me and Marty thought that the match they did with Gargano and Ciampa, that was the next step in their saga.
Right.
Because that was going to be the triple threat, and then there was going to be a main event between Gargano and Ciampa again, but at the next takeover, it probably would have been at War Games or whatever one after that. And Alistair was a good way to prolong the feud. So, you know, kind of sort of how, you know, Daniel Bryan and Miz's feud got prolonged by being put in the mixed tag match. If you can keep a feud fresh like that by not having the same exact thing over and over again, it's for the better. So that's what they had planned, but unfortunately, you know, shit happens. So, you know, Gargano had to face Ciampa in the main event, and you could tell that it wasn't quite as hot, but the match brought you back in and remember that storyline. They used the same similar vignettes from the past encounter they had, and you know, it was go time again, and then Johnny was hot again, Ciampa was hot again, so it worked for what they had to work with. It definitely delivered. So that's what they were going into. And then now I feel like they're in a place where we don't know where to go, because we just used the match. We're going to use two ones from there instead of the one at the time.
I am still waiting for them to do the I Quit match.
Oh, it'd be great. What do you think it would all culminate at WrestleMania weekend?
Possibly.
Could it be a year-long feud?
Oh, yeah, I think it could. And yes, if they're going to do an I Quit match, okay, whether it's the I Quit match or if the crowd really gets behind Johnny again and he's going to win the championship, I think it would have to be that weekend, if that's the route that they're going. Now, if they do an I Quit match, to me, Ciampa cannot be champion. Like, Johnny has to cost him the title, whether it's to Alistair or whether it is to somebody else. Maybe that's going to be where Adam Cole comes in, or a Matt Riddle or somebody like that. I mean, there's a lot of good options that they have. So maybe that would happen there. And then that would set up, okay, I've had enough of you. I was champion, la la la. Let's finish this once and for all. And let's go I Quit.
Yeah. No, I would love it. Me and Marty have always said this, we should have the first ever two out of three stages of hell match.
Yes, I would not have a problem with that.
God. Not two out of three falls, my bad. Obviously,
yeah, three stages of hell match. But
three stages of hell, yeah.
These guys keep having these brutal matches, and we're asking them to do more. I know.
They're good. And the best part is they keep on reminiscing to their past encounters by using the same strategies, but someone else has that, you know, the upper hand by remembering what happened. You know, like they did it in with each match. They've tried the same stuff, but it hasn't worked all the time. I think it's really cool how they kind of harken back to it. Like, you know, exposing the ring, exposing the outside mat, you know, using the crutch, whatever it is. They're not forgetting to, you know, kind of tell a story about how this has been going on forever, and they do it well in the ring. I can't wait until they get back together, and they're doing a good thing right now. I think they're not writing Johnny off, but we haven't seen him on TV since that match. And he gave Velveteen a great rub. He put him over well, and that was Velveteen's biggest win to date. So I think that NXT is in a really great place. I really do.
Spencer, I appreciate you coming on with me. Everybody can listen to you on the Stick to the Gimmick podcast with you and Marty Harp, which comes out basically Saturday mornings is when we put the podcast out. So you guys tape on Fridays?
Yeah, we tape on Fridays, usually Friday late morning, early afternoon. It depends on my schedule, and it's going to get a little bit more hectic now that the NBA season's back.
Yeah, because you do have other work, just like I do as well. But but it gives everybody some weekend listening. And like I said, you guys focus on NXT, but you talk some WWE as well. So is there anything in particular you guys are going to dissect this week on the podcast?
Pretty much we just go on a reviewing these episodes, just pretty much in chronological order as best as we can remember them, because obviously a lot of stuff happens. But we will definitely be talking about that Ricochet and Pete Dunne match in great detail. Talk about Jackson Riker's in-ring debut in NXT, formerly known as Gunner in TNA.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opening match, the tag team match between Lacey Evans and Aaliyah versus Dakota Kai and Deonna Purrazzo. Cheap plug. Can I give myself a cheap plug?
Yeah, please do.
All right. We are on Twitter at Gimmick Pod. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/stick to the gimmick. Give us a follow. Give us a subscription. Give us some nice comments. We are trying to build our following. I know I'm really crappy about posting stuff on Twitter because it's very hard when you have three different jobs. We have those episodes come out on Blog Talk Radio every morning. We have them on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you want to go. So give us a listen. I promise we'll entertain you. Marty just complains about life. It's really funny. and he hates my guts. So have fun listening to that.
I just can't wait till you finally get your special guest on there that you, you know, talk about every week.
I don't know what you're talking about. He gets on every week. So
thanks, Spence.
Yep. No problem, Brian.
Time for some Q&A. You can leave your questions on the Facebook page, facebook.com/between the ropes. I put up a post there every week. Just leave your questions on that post. And of course, you know, focus on wrestling, but if you want to ask non-wrestling stuff, go for it. That's fine as well. The worst thing will happen is I'll say, you know what? I have no idea about that, but you never know. I might have some ideas, some thoughts about something. So feel free to ask whatever you want. But of course, the primary thing here is always going to be wrestling. Let's get to some of the questions. Bill Dixon asks, have you had a chance to watch MLW and its War Games match yet? If you did, what did you think? How does this version of MLW compare to the one in the early 2000s? I will be honest with you. I haven't talked much about MLW on here because I don't get that channel. So I have a hard time watching MLW shows, and I'm not getting screeners. I did originally, and I went to a lot of the shows originally as well, being in Orlando, and that's where they were taping a lot of them. And if I was still living in Florida, I might have gone down to Fort Lauderdale to go see the War Games show. I think it compares pretty favorably. I mean, I would say it's right around the same. I mean, Court's game plan right now is to utilize some local talents, but obviously get some bigger names and take advantage of the huge pool of talent that's out there right now that is available to him. And but he is mixing in some other notable names as well. Like he's got Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. And there's been a lot of talk about that. There was a lot of talk that those guys were headed to NXT. And then Mike Johnson of PWInsider.com reported this week that, no, those guys are still under contract with Lucha Underground. They can't go anywhere when it comes to WWE, NXT, until that deal ends, which is at least 2020. And it might be even later than that, depending on if Lucha gets renewed. But in the meantime, they are going to be working for Impact Wrestling, which they've been doing, and they're going to be with MLW. It sounds like Court Bauer talked about how he moved heaven and earth to lock those guys up as well. And as long as they're not under contract with WWE or NXT, obviously same company, that they can work elsewhere. So it seems like they're going to be staying with MLW and working other places for a while. And they're great additions to the roster with MLW. But when it comes to the War Games match, there's a lot of people that really liked it. I know that Court is embracing more of the violence, especially in a match like that. I mean, that's going to be a violent match, but he's not shying away from hardcore matches. Not everything is a hardcore match, but I think that Court believes that there is something that has been missing when it comes to some hardcore, or at least some matches that have blood. Court's more of an old school guy, I believe, but he mixes in new style things. So it's obviously doing pretty well because they're talking about doing more shows in New York and in Chicago and trying to get other television deals around the world. I don't know how valuable those are, but you know, things add up. And if you have a product that other people want, and they're willing to pay you for it, that's a good thing. So we'll just see where all this goes right now. I am trying to find a way to where I can watch more MLW, and then I can give you more of an honest opinion about it. But I think so far there's been a lot of people that have really liked it. And that's good news for wrestling. Francis, let me get to you, buddy. You only left, what, like 8 questions this week? I'll get to a couple of these. And by the way, Francis, come on. Total Divas, don't even ask. I'm not going to watch it. Even though it was just announced that Paige is going to be a part of the show this coming season, she is back. Let's see some of the things that Francis asked. What was so wrong with the new look Hell in a Cell? I didn't say there was anything wrong with it. I mean, it's red. I mean, the cell is now red instead of just being the regular fence color. I don't know why they did that. I would assume it was probably a Vince McMahon thing. So I didn't have a problem with it. Do you think we will see Starrcade on the WWE Network? They did announce they're going to do Starrcade again, but they're doing it in Cincinnati, Ohio, which has the fine folk in the Greensboro, Winston-Salem people area. I'm sure they are a little bit upset about that. I know one particular guy that used to be a part of this podcast who is not happy that the show is going to be in Cincinnati, Ohio. It is not going to be on the network. That's already been announced. I believe that's not going to be on there. But, I mean, I'm sure we're going to see highlights all over their social media and whatnot. But the plan right now is for it to not be on the network because the amount of costs that go with taking everything you need to put a show on the network live, they don't want to do that. So it's just going to be a special attraction kind of thing that they're putting over there. Now, I would not have a problem if they kept it like in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, kind of the roots of the NWA and the Starrcade event. But they want to take it on the road a little bit, so they're taking it to Cincinnati this year. Do you think that on Crown Jewel, the trophy will be bigger than the Greatest Royal Rumble? I have no idea. Who knows what that person's going to get? Yeah, who knows what we're going to get on that? And who do you think will be the favorite for the mixed match challenge this year? Well, Braun Strowman and Ember Moon. Alexa Bliss is injured right now, so she's out. And Ember Moon's taking her place, so I would say that's got to be a strong contention. AJ Styles and Charlotte, to me, that they're the favorites. What's her name? Phenomenal Flair, but Phenomenal spelled with an F. I'll be honest with you, I don't know how much I'm going to watch of the Mixed Match Challenge. I'm a little bit more pickier than some people. I'm sorry. And it's nothing against those guys, but it's just like, you know what? I've only got so many hours in the day and I want to do some other things. So we'll see how much I watch a Mixed Match Challenge, to be honest with you. John Ross Campbell asks, with the recent deals and shows being announced in Saudi Arabia and Australia, as well as the constant calls for a UK pay-per-view, can you see the model being the big four in the US and the rest of the calendar being more of a tour? We know the Saudi thing will last for a bit, but could they perhaps take the B shows like Hell in a Cell, Backlash, etc. on the road? With the recent globalization ideas, surely it's a good basis to launch any potential country-specific promotions And what with TV deals, we might finally get the UK show they seem to have forgotten about. I think they're still very open to doing a UK show. I think one of their big problems that they have there is if they want to make it one of the regular monthly pay-per-views, whether it's even like a B show, like Hell in a Cell or Money in the Bank or whatever it's going to be, that there is the issue when it comes to time, because you're 5 hours ahead of the East Coast in the UK. So East Coast of the United States. So I think from that standpoint, it makes it difficult for WWE. And I know you could say, well, they can run it on delay. And obviously they could, but I don't know if WWE really wants to do that. They like the social media interaction that goes along with these shows. Now, when it comes to these other ones, like the Saudi Arabia show or the show in Australia, those are huge paid for events. I mean, they've got, you know, basically the government of Saudi Arabia is behind those shows. Okay. And those are 10, that's a 10 year deal that they're doing there. So they don't mind, you know, bringing in anybody and everybody that they can, because the amount of money that's being paid to them is so ridiculous that they will do that. And they'll put on those big events. Australia, they got a big time promoter behind that. They're doing it in a huge building. They're going to do 50, 60,000 people for that show. They're being paid a lot of money for that event. So they don't mind doing it. If they do it in the UK, they're doing it on their own. It's not like they've got a government paying them for it. It's not like they've got a big time promoter over there that's doing it for them. They would be doing it on their own. I do think WWE wants to do another show in the UK. It's just a matter of when they're going to do another big show in the UK. And, you know, when it comes to the other promotions, I mean, obviously they're doing NXT UK. So that's going to be coming up here, and we'll see when that's going to launch on the WWE network. But I think for the time being, it's an idea that WWE wants to probably do at some point. It's just figuring out when is the best time and how do they want to do it? Because like I said, with those pay-per-views, they like them being on at night in the United States. And there's that time difference between the two countries. So that makes it a little bit different, as my voice tries to crack right there. Here we go. Clear my voice there. Michael Janner, why have events like Hell in a Cell and TLC when there are only two matches going with that theme and not all or most of the matches? If they're only going to have two theme matches, then don't name that pay-per-view that match type. Well, I mean, when it comes to Hell in a Cell, I mean, you don't see it on other shows typically. So that's why. I mean, and they like having that name for Hell in a Cell. I think it's a good idea that they don't do all the matches in the cell, because then it takes down the importance of it. So I like it that they're only doing two matches in the cell. I mean, a lot of people scoffed when back in the day, TNA did an all cage match pay-per-view when it came to Lockdown. And I think for the most part, it worked, but it does affect that gimmick. It does affect the cage on that night. I mean, we're already seeing Hell in a Cell. I mean, even the two matches that they did inside the cell this year, I mean, did those matches really need to be inside the cell? Were they that important and it got to that point in those storylines and those feuds and those rivalries that they needed to be in the cell? No, not really. But they did it anyway. But I mean, it makes it feel a little bit more important when there's only two matches inside that. When it comes to like TLC, it's the same thing. I think it, you know, with TLC, every match used to be, you know, whether it was a chairs match, a ladder match, a table match, and then you would have one, maybe two matches. That would be a true TLC type match. And I like that from the standpoint that, like, you're going to protect that gimmick of, like, the TLC thing. Like, it stands out when there's one match that has all of it. Now, mind you, it's a little bit weird when it comes to that because, okay, it's a tables match. You can win. You have to win by throwing your opponent through a table. But can you use a ladder in that match? Yeah. Can you use a chair in that match? Yeah. So for that show, it's a little bit different because you can throw the rules out the window for that thing, unless they're going to do it where it's just like, okay, there's two matches, there are TLC, and then the other matches are just straight up matches. They're not tables matches. They're not a ladder match. There's not a chair match. I prefer it that way, quite honestly, because I don't like gimmicks overdone on pay-per-views. So when they only do a couple of matches with that theme pay-per-view, then it makes sense. And it's always going to be like one of the main events, or the last match on the show most likely is going to have that gimmick part of it. So I'm cool with them naming those events like that. I mean, it's done for marketing as well. I mean, there is a reason to it why they do that. And it stands out, I think, in their mind, and it's an easy way to name their events. Aston Blake asks, what do you think of Kevin Owens' role? I personally think he should be given a much bigger role at the top. What are your thoughts on this? Yeah, I totally agree that Kevin should be given a bigger role. But right now, if you look at what they're doing, especially on Raw, they've got their pecking order where they've got the Shield going up against Strowman, Ziggler, McIntyre. That's their top storyline. And, you know, that's even got the Universal Championship rolled up in it with Roman being champion. So they're not going to put Kevin in that role right now. I mean, it's just, he's in a good spot. I mean, I am like a lot of other people where I would like to see him do a lot more. I would like to be given bigger opportunities, but I think Kevin makes a lot of the opportunities that he has given. And I think he's going to make a lot of this one. And right now, this is just where he's at. You know, it's him and, you know, Bobby Lashley are going to be doing stuff here. We got Leo Rush now with Lashley, and he's in a good spot considering if you're not going to be in the top spot on Raw right now, he's right below it. He's like in that next rung. So he's still in a good spot, but they should still do more with Kevin Owens. I totally agree about that. Matt Ellis asks, been watching Impact Wrestling a little bit lately, and I've noticed Brian Cage. I like his look and style in and out of the ring. What are your thoughts on Cage? And do you think he could play a big part of Impact as it continues to move past the TNA days? Yeah, absolutely. I think he is going to be a big, big part of what they're doing. I think between him, Austin Aries, Phoenix, Pentagon, I think all those guys are going to be a big part of Impact. You know, whatever they do going forward. You know, there was a story this week that Mike Johnson put out there, once again from PWInsider.com, talking about how Ed Nordholm and Scott D'Amore were recently at WWE headquarters and sat down with Triple H and some other people. And it was kind of this weird meeting because it was kind of like, hey, let's all meet face to face. But it's like, why are we meeting? Because Nordholm apparently, reportedly went out of his way to say, hey, our tape library is not for sale. We are not for sale, but we just kind of wanted to meet because we've done a couple little business things here lately when it comes to giving access to some footage for the WWE network. And I'm kind of looking at it like, okay, then why did you meet? What was the point of that? I think Impact's doing better than it was, but there's still a lot of questions going forward with them. What's going to be their TV deal coming up here? I believe their deal with Pop TV is coming up at the end of the year. And you can't tell me that if they're in this meeting with Triple H, with Paul Levesque, and he goes, hey, you know what? I'd like to buy your video library, or I'd like to buy your company. Here's the figure. And if the right number wasn't thrown out there, yeah, they would have sold. But they went in there saying, oh, by the way, we're not for sale. The meeting, to me, just kind of stands out of, like, what was the meeting about then? That was kind of weird. But going back to the original question, when it comes to Brian Cage, yeah, I think Brian's going to be a big part of that. And I mean, he's a big athletic guy. I mean, he's a muscular guy, can do a lot of athletic stuff. And he should be a focal part of what they're doing going forward. Couple other things. And I know Aston Blake asked a couple of other questions. I'll throw these out there as well. Reports of Rey Mysterio returning to WWE. What sort of role do you see him being in? What sort of schedule do you see him doing? It sounds like he signed a 2-year deal, but he has an option after 18 months to give notice. I think Ray, because of the reaction he's going to get, he's going to be slotted, you know, near the main event. He's going to be slotted very high up. He's going to be in a prominent role. I think it's going to be more like a Randy Orton schedule. I don't think it's going to be overdone. And I guess the biggest thing for everybody too is, can Ray stay healthy? And hopefully he can. I mean, that's always the biggest thing when it comes to Ray, is stay healthy and be out there and have another good run with WWE. Let's see, two last ones. Actually, you know what? Two last ones. Mark Tracy, is it just me, or does Leo Rush seem like Scrappy Doo to Bobby Lashley being like Scooby Doo? I mean, Leo Rush is a smaller guy, but he's a small athletic guy that can really talk. I mean, he's a really engaging personality, and I think it's a curious decision to put him up on the main roster, to put him with Bobby Lashley. Now they're embracing managers a little bit more, but hey, you know what? I'm all for it because, like I said, he's a gifted talker, and if they want to put him with Lashley, let's see where it goes, but I'm for it right now. Last thing, Matthew Schaefer Gage asks, with John Bones Jones suspension now ending in October, do you think they bypass Lesnar versus Cormier for Lesnar versus Jones? Or does it make more financial sense to have Lesnar face Cormier and UFC hopes he wins to set up a Jones versus Lesnar match for the heavyweight title? So yeah, that's an interesting question, I think, because Brock Lesnar, it seemed like his original interest in going back to UFC was to fight Bones Jones, but he was suspended. And I'm not even going to get into all of the things when it comes to that suspension, because his suspension's being lifted after only 16 months. He's going to be eligible to fight at the end of October, even though Dana White's now saying, well, he's not going to fight until, you know, 2019. We'll see what happens there. There's a lot of stuff that goes into the suspension. It's all hokey. I mean, if you go by the letter of the law, he probably should have been suspended for 4 years. And, you know, he's getting 16 months. I mean, he's not even getting 18 months. He's not even getting 2 years. He's not even getting 4 years, which he easily could have gotten. He's getting 16 months because of circumstances and an arbitrator ruling and everything. But he's going to be back fighting probably the latest 2019. I still think they're going to do Cormier against Lesnar. And the winner of that will face Bones Jones next year. I think that's the route they're still going to go, because I think either of those guys winning against Jones probably makes the most sense financially. Plus with Cormier, you know, if he's going to face Brock, he's going to stay at heavyweight. So there's weight issues there when it comes to, because if he fights Bones Jones, well, Jones is going to have to go up to heavyweight either way. So, but I do think that, I think they're going to go with Cormier first. I think that's the route they want to go. And they feel like, hey, you know what? Either of those guys fighting Jones, that's a big money fight. I mean, they'll make a ton of money either way. And if Brock wins, I mean, if he beats Daniel Cormier and wins the heavyweight championship, obviously he's going to fight a second time. So, yeah, I think that's the route they're going to go. If they do Lesnar against Jones first, then yeah, you know, if Brock won that fight, then you'd have Brock against Cormier for the heavyweight championship at that point. But I think when it comes to money, they want to do it the other way around. Plus, I mean, quite honestly, Brock is going to be the underdog in both of those fights. And I think UFC probably believes that as well. So I would go with the plan, like, we're getting Brock for one fight. We're getting him for one fight. And then if he wins that one fight, then we get him for a second one. And that's awesome. So I think that's the route they're probably going to go. Brock Lesnar, Daniel Cormier, heavyweight championship. And then whoever wins takes on John Bones Jones next year. And he'll be fighting for the heavyweight championship in the main event of a major pay-per-view after yet another suspension. Feel free to go off on your rants here about the system when it comes to MMA and USADA and UFC and all of that fun stuff. That will do it for this week's podcast. Thanks again for everybody for listening and supporting. Please subscribe to the podcast. You could do that on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, just about anywhere that you can find podcasts. You will find the Between the Ropes podcast. Please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend as well, and support us on Patreon as well. Patreon.com/Between the Ropes. $3 a month. You get the ad-free version of this podcast. Thanks again, everybody. I'll talk to you again next week right here, Between the Ropes.